From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
A one, a two, a three, crunch.
Boomerang, toomerang, zoomerang. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, today, this afternoon, right now, it's Thursday, October 20th, 2011.
And this is show 120.
That's a lot. That's a nice round number divisible by lots of things.
I don't care what it is you have, even if it's, you know, other than grains of sand, even if it's like kernels of rice. Is rice come in kernels or is it grains of rice? What is the unit of rice?
It is a grain of rice, as rice is a grain.
I like rice kernels, though.
The rice kernels. That was... That Texas school, I believe, before they changed their name to the rice
Aronies.
Owls?
the Rice Krispies. In any event, no matter what you have, if it is the size of a grain of rice or larger, 120 of them is a lot.
Yeah, it's more
that,
than a few.
That includes, that includes podcasts, even though they don't have a physical corporeal form.
Not yet. We're still working on the corporeal form podcast orator, very Calvin and Hobbes-esque bit of machinery we've been working on.
Yeah. So we're on a new setup.
Yes.
If you care to describe.
Hopefully, my vocals sound really awesome to all of you. If it sounds awesome, it's because I've spent the last couple of weeks setting up in my basement. A pretty complete recording studio down here, which I've dubbed Black Mold Studios for some of its... Oh, bless
you. That made me sneeze. It's so awesome it made me sneeze.
Let's try it again. Black Mold Studios.
Nope. It's lost the magic.
Brucha. Okay, that worked. But yes, named for some of the former occupants. It also features the Hannibal Lecter. I'm sorry, not the Hannibal Lecter. The Blair Witch Vocal Isolation Corner.
Yeah, I like that.
As you know, Paul, my cellar, if you haven't seen it, and you haven't, I'm pretty sure. I'm worried if you have.
Well, I mean, I've seen it. When you say you mean the listener you.
Yes, I know that you've seen it, Paul. You've seen most of Black Mold Studios assembled already.
I did. I got to see it this past weekend.
But it's very much in the Blair Witch, Hannibal Lecter, Buffalo Bill basement mold, where it's not intended to be inhabited in any way by anything except for specters.
For Christmas, I'm going to buy you some lotion and a basket.
Will you put the lotion in the basket?
I will put the lotion in the basket, but only whenever I'm told.
Will you put them in the fucking basket? Anyway, so it's got like this cool diamond-shaped sound reinforcing stuff, which I think is what they call it. Some monitors, like actual monitors, so I can mix on monitors. But I'm getting too far into the details, too far into the weeds.
Yeah, hopefully sound nerd.
Yeah, it's true. I can go on for a long time, but I won't. But the point is, I did it for you, listener, so I sound even better, I hope.
And if you want to get an idea of the shared sacrifice here, Storm had to set up this whole studio, and now, because of the setup, he has one less computer in that room than he had before, so as such, I now must hear him via Skype, via his mobile phone.
That's right.
He sounds like crap to me, and there's probably more latency between the two of us. But we're making that sacrifice so that he will sound better to you, the people we care about.
We will solve that part of the equation later. This is literally the first actual project or actual thing that's been done here in Black Mold Studios. Though, again, this is in the Paul and Storm are being assholes category. there's a ton of stuff that we are on the verge of doing that's most musical, which was part of the motivation.
I like that we're on the verge of doing things. It sort of makes me feel like we're standing at some sort of precipice, just sort of leaning out, trying to find our little tipping point.
I feel like we are. Like, we always say, oh, you know, there's stuff we can't tell you about that's coming to fruition, and there are a bunch of things, and there are, like, three or four of the larger ones that are, like, we're at the tippy top of the roller coaster after it's chugged us up to the top.
Yeah, and I just hope it doesn't get stuck up there so that the operator has to climb the stairs and let us out manually.
Whatever it takes, because right now I'm enjoying the view from up here. So at any rate, that was part of the motivation of setting up the studio, is if we're going to be spending a lot of time recording and mixing and stuff, I want to do it in style. Anyway, you want to get on to the frivolity?
Yeah, let us sally forth.
Sure. Did you have anything you were raring to talk about?
I don't particularly. You said you had a bunch of notes, and we have some questions on the Twitters. So let's just sort of let's go forth.
Yeah, I want to get back to sort of some of the old stuff, the quick stuff, the weird stuff.
Okay.
So let's start with some battles, some good old battles.
Good old battles.
Tell you what, we'll do one and maybe do some more. Well, let's see. First battle. A cannon that shoots puppies. Not that shoots at pet puppies, but shoots out puppies.
Shoots puppies out of its muzzle. Got it.
Yes. Versus a bomber that drops Monte Cristo sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
So one side is armed with the puppy cannons, the other, the bombers with Monte Cristo sandwiches.
Uh-huh.
Which side wins?
And when you say wins,
they're trying to defeat the other side. In any war, the objective is to break the other side's will and then dominate them however you choose.
I would say the owners of the puppy cannon will win.
Why so?
I say this because I have faith in the overall goodness of humanity. And while Monte Cristo sandwiches dropping from the heavens is annoying,
okay,
you can deal with it. Like, you know, if a Monte Cristo sandwich hits you in the head, the worst that's going to happen is it's going to sort of splat and you'll have Monte Cristo sandwich all over you.
Right.
Which, you know, you can deal with that and still accomplish other tasks, I think.
So you don't
even in a Monte Crispo carpet bombing. But if somebody is shooting puppies at you, and I will proceed using the argument that I am assuming that the puppies are fired in a fashion that they are not killed by the act of firing.
Correct.
But somehow it's like a gentle launching, sort of like a slingshot type deal.
Let's say there are numerous delivery systems, some fast, some slow, but they all deliver the puppy alive, intact, tail
right,
waggling, bright-eyed.
But what I'm thinking is if there are puppies coming at you, hurtling at you,
yeah,
because I believe in the innate goodness of humanity, I think people will lose their instinct to fight a battle or a war and concentrate solely on making sure these puppies get caught safely, so that they are not, splattering on the ground and being killed by the impacts. So first of all, that side's going to be distracted by puppy catching.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, when all that is done, they're going to be surrounded by adorable puppies.
Yep.
And again, I think that is going to sap their will to fight, because who really can fight a war when there's puppies scampering about your feet everywhere?
I'm encouraged by your answer, and really that's what it's set up for. It's mm-hmm. a real litmus test. You're not evil. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Though it would be said that in a protracted war, the side firing the Monte Cristo sandwiches would probably win.
Why do you say that?
Well, as cute as puppies are, etc., if you eat enough Monte Cristo sandwiches, and let's say they've been fired at you this whole time, you're going to eat them. Eventually, you're going to end up enough of your forces are going to end up with heart disease. So that's really
That's a good point. Of course, you are assuming that they're going to eat all these. You know, like I see it as you're providing the enemy with rations, and at a certain point they might realize we can't eat all these Monte Cristos, or we're just going to feel all bloated and sleepy. So they might, you know, use the Monte Cristo sandwiches for other means, like the building of forts or the feeding of the puppies, so that they are that much happier and filled with poop as they come hurtling. We haven't even discussed the poop issue.
There is a big poop issue, and I don't think it I don't think it's a problem. It's a fertilizer that could solve the issue of what to eat. But I think the main, you really got to the main point of it, is that even in wartime, puppies break the lines wide open. Of course, then the brutality that follows by those who shot the puppies is horrible, but that's okay. The puppies were saved. Oh, here we go. Here's a topic. Lasers are still cool. All right. And I'm going to make this
lasers or losers?
Lasers, L-A-S-E-R.
Lasers.
The acronym, that stands for lights and sound everywhere revolves slowly. I think that's what lasers stands for. But I'm going to make this my get excited about space topic, since space and lasers go together like bread and... bread packaging.
And crust.
Yes. So here's, I had this thought that it may have appeared in popular culture beforehand, but really the first that I could identify where it was big was War of the Worlds, right? Where they had the death ray. And that was like a really scary thing. Still is. It still frightens me. And then... later in 50s and 60s, sci-fi, very prominent and everywhere. And then I would say that Star Wars ushered in a new golden age of lasers, laser beams. I mean, fictional, you know. Though James Bond, you know, actual lasers that exist, maybe they don't cut crotches all the time. But
right.
They're just cool.
Certainly it's not the sole purpose they were manufactured for.
Except for the crotch cutting laser company, but they didn't survive James Bond's attack. So that was technologically aided, the ability to portray these cool flashy lights, and continues to this day. Like if you tell someone, you know, I got a laser, they're gonna make a lot of ooh-ah sounds. Maybe not a laser pointer; those are very common. But the point is, it's something that has maintained its cool status for a very long time. And the question to you, Paul, and to you listening, is what else has maintained its cool level for that long? I could only think of a couple of things myself.
Let's see. A well-tailored double-breasted suit.
You think? I mean, do people get really excited about that, like, in terms of
Well,
fashion?
I don't know. Maybe not, you know, in terms of passion, but it is a thing that has been cool since, you know, the 20s. And I don't believe it has ever lost its cool. We're redefining cool here, but, you know, you didn't narrowly state your terms, so I'm just... I'm working with the tools I have.
No, you know what? I think it's fine to broaden the topic that way. I was thinking in terms of sort of nerdy excitement, but I would
I've totally taken you off of space. Until they come up with the double-breasted spacesuit, we're definitely no longer on the space topic.
All right, NASA, Phil Plate, get on that, please. I would say even the tuxedo. Like when you see a sharp tuxedo or if you're wearing one, it's still mighty cool, time-tested. Even if there are variations. Good.
And I think a lot of it has to do with it being a bespoke suit of any type, like a well-tailored, a suit that is tailored to the person wearing it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Whereas there are certainly types of suits like those with huge puffy shoulders that may not be specifically cool right now. But yeah, the classic suit of its various guises, including tuxedos and double-breasted. Done and done. I would say the word cool itself has maintained its status for an exceptionally long time.
I think you're probably right there.
Like, it's no longer jargon or slang. It's just what it is.
Did you have any particular other things in mind that you thought had retained their cool in your notes before?
Well, that's the thing. Paul's computer has closed down again. He had asked me if
I am recording again. Nope.
And Paul,
we're
is
back.
Recording again. Okay, so I'll just talk to Paul.
I was saying, yeah. Is there anything that you had in mind besides the laser that you thought retained its nerdy, sciencey cool?
Well, that was the thing. Is I really couldn't think of anything particular. And in popular culture, all I really came up with were the words cool and Fonzie. You know,
yeah.
And even there, it's not like, you know, he's everywhere anymore. But I was encouraged by a discussion on Reddit where Fonzie came up, and that the overwhelming majority of people across all ages, and the Reddit community, I would say, skews younger than us, not by a massive amount, but there are a lot of people, I'd say, in their 20s on there who are nostalgic for, say, Pokemon, you know, or the Sega Genesis system. Right, DuckTales, which that was like maybe when we were in college and afterwards.
Pretty much, yeah.
But even they identify Fonzie and think he's cool. So that's a common theme on this podcast. And I think we've exhausted that topic.
Fair enough. Next subject.
Did you have a thing? You sounded like you might have a thing.
I did, and it completely escaped out of my brain.
Okay.
So it could not have been that good.
Then another battle it shall be.
Yes.
The Tooth Fairy versus Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
And the field of battle is taxi driving. Now, the way this is judged is in part by how effectively they get their passengers to where they're going, and also the tips that they receive, and just sort of the general experience. Like, someone walked away and said, you know, that I was satisfied with that livery service.
Yeah, I gotcha. I would say that the Tooth Fairy is probably a more efficient driver, like will get you to your destination quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Just as the Tooth Fairy is working 365 days a year. So the Tooth Fairy is always on the clock. So the Tooth Fairy is always getting updated as far as routes and knows traffic patterns and such.
Yep.
Whereas I think Santa will probably be a more jovial driver that will get a bigger tip. Like the kind that, you know, whenever you get in a taxi, you pretty much never want to talk to the taxi driver for the most part.
Sure.
Certainly most New Yorkers I know, they want to get into a taxi, want to get where the hell they're going, and they don't want a lot of fuss. And sometimes you will get the odd taxi driver who will want to engage you in conversation.
Yeah.
And it is seldom, and it is only the most skilled of taxi conversationalists that manages to actually bring you out of your surly funk because you're in a taxi somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And make you happy about it. But I think Santa would probably excel at that particular task.
He would. So, were you saying Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus?
Well, I'm saying as far as that the Tooth Fairy will be a better driver as far as it just efficient routes.
Yep.
Santa will be a more enjoyable experience while you are in the cab. Like, you will remember Santa. Like, hey, remember when that cab ride we had with that big jelly fat dude? Like, that's the kind you'll reminisce about your taxi ride with Santa.
Now, do you think
whereas you will just momentarily be impressed, you know, you'll get out of the taxi after the Tooth Fairy drives you somewhere and you think, wow, we made awesome time. Way to go, dude.
Now, do you think that Santa's joviality and the memorable experience will result in him? Let's bring it down to who will come away with the best paycheck in a year between, I guess, the fares and their ability to deliver and the tips. Like, will Santa's
a good question.
Attitude result in enough tips to offset the fact that maybe he doesn't do it as efficiently, unless he's only ever taking people home?
That is a very good question. Like, the Tooth Fairy will have more fares per day.
Yeah.
Whereas Santa will get more tips. It's a good question. I could just cop out and I say they'll probably it'll be a wash, but I'm going to say that Santa is going to just eke it out because he's going to have such good tips. Not from everybody, but he's going to generally make people tip more, and he will occasionally get a really awesome tip.
Although, could it not be that people would it not? Or might people think they'd be insulting Santa by giving him money? I mean,
but then I guess that becomes the question. Like, do you know Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy are the people driving you? Like, are they still the same? What's the word? Creatures, entities that they are now. It's just they are also happen to be driving a cab for you. Or is it just like that you don't necessarily know who they are? But they retain the same personality and powers.
I think every answer on this is just going to open up more questions.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a rabbit hole just keeps going deeper.
Yeah, this is more of a comic book than a battle, I think.
Yeah, I think this is a graphic novel series. I think we're going to need to talk to our friends, our close personal friends, Matt Fraction and Neil Gaiman. I think Santa and Tooth Fairy Taxi Company has a 12-issue run in it, maybe for Marvel.
Yeah, give us a call. I have a we put the word out on Twitter, and our friend Widget had actually what we both agreed before this call was a pretty excellent question, which I will read. To what degree does the shape of a pretzel influence your attitude towards eating it, Paul?
Mm-hmm. Well, as we know, as we have established from many previous podcasts, that Paul has a he said, speaking of himself in the third person, Paul has a has the general eating habits of a child, of like a 11-year-old boy, and as such, I have retained certain eating patterns. I should specify at this moment we are speaking of a soft pretzel.
Yeah, okay.
And specifically, we are speaking of like a standard pretzel-shaped soft pretzel, like the super pretzel that you could buy in the supermarket, as opposed to the Philly-style sort of squished knot pretzel.
So you've already drawn a line in the sand between soft pretzels and hard pretzels.
I have, although I generally eat them the same way.
Yeah.
My reasoning, it really stems from the soft pretzel more so than the hard pretzel.
Okay.
But I eat, with a soft pretzel specifically, I eat the nubs first.
Yeah.
I eat the two nubs.
Yeah.
And then I eat, in sequence, the two ears.
Yeah.
I think we know what we're talking about there.
Sure.
And I work my way in towards the interior Gordian knot.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is the distribution of crunchy outside to soft inside.
Yeah.
And part of it is salt retention.
Hmm.
There's a better concentration. There's a, to my taste, a more proper concentration of salt. I like a pretty salty pretzel.
Yeah.
And the interior knot of a pretzel generally has more salt on it than the outside points.
It's the property of centripetal salt distribution on a pretzel. They spin them to put the salt on, I believe.
Yes. So I put it on a spirograph, actually.
That'd be kind of cool. I actually have a similar habit, and it carries over to my classically shaped hard pretzel eating, in that I know there's no reason that it would be true, but I tend to eat all around until you get to that center nub. And regardless of what pretzel brand it is, it always tastes extra buttery to me, like the nub part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for that reason, I think pretzel sticks are bullshit because there's no core to them. There's no core to them.
They're certainly not. They're certainly less preferable than a regular pretzel. I will still eat a pretzel stick if the choice is between a pretzel stick and nothing.
Right.
And I am a big fan of the pretzel rod, I have to say.
I would distinguish between the rod and the stick as well. Like, I'm not quite as salty, and I guess the little sticks, they're just a... It's like going into the salt mines, you know? It's
little
like
sticks, now I'm picturing... When you said little sticks, I'm picturing one of those dwarf cover bands.
Right. They're sailing away in a rowboat.
Yep. Yep. But anyway.
I think we've answered that one, Widge.
Yeah.
We've settled
there
that.
You have it, Widge.
The center. As long as it's got a center, we're pretty happy.
That's right.
How about one more bath?
I have a...
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say I have a Pollen Storm recommends.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think I mentioned this on a previous podcast. My family, or most of my family at least, we've become genuine and full-bodied converts to the Church of Friday Night Lights.
I know.
The series.
We've talked about it, but I don't think you mentioned it, no.
I don't think we've said it on the podcast. I've heard wonderful things about it from people whose judgment I trust, and it has always been a case of... I've wanted to be sort of at the right mental place before I started in on a whole new series, because there's, I guess, 5 seasons of it, and it's a commitment. And it's been on Netflix streaming for some time, and finally just the timing was right, and I sat down with my wife and I said, hey, let's watch this show. I've heard good things about it. And she said, okay. And we watched it, and we really enjoy it. Now also my youngest daughter joins us. Hmm. It's a regular viewing in our house, and it's just a good, well-written, fun, interesting show about Texas high school football. And I say that, and I also should mention, neither my daughter nor my wife care at all for football or for the Texas football culture.
Hmm.
Yeah. And yet we still enjoy the snot out of it.
I'm going to give it a go myself. I haven't been able to convince Mrs. Storm to watch it. She went to Texas for grad school. And I think she got more Texas culture than she ever wanted. But I'm still going to try to bring her around. So,
yeah,
good work.
It's definitely worthwhile. It makes you, as our friend Bill Corbett, he said, dropping yet another name in this podcast, as Bill Corbett said on Twitter a while back when I mentioned I was watching it, Friday Night Lights makes you feel big feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely a sort of a emotion, if not quite manipulative, certainly an emotional show.
Yep.
But it's got heart.
We are still working our way through Breaking Bad, which is still most enjoyable for us.
It's a good one.
Want to go one more battle and close her out?
One more battle and that's it. Sounds good.
Okay. The Dog Whisperer versus Yoda. And this, the battlefield may be a little bit of a stretch for us. It's a little outside of both of our comfort zones. The battle is which would make a better Pokemon trainer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would have to go with Yoda.
Okay.
Because the Dog Whisperer, Cesar, is geared towards training animals to behave and be docile and be submissive, whereas Yoda is training warriors, albeit Jedi who are devoted to peace and violence as a last resort. Nonetheless, Yoda's training warriors and people who know how to handle themselves in a fight.
You know, I think it's very hard to argue against that, but you don't believe that that Cesar would be able to... I mean, this is the fantasy realm, to harness his ability to communicate with animals for other purposes.
He could, but again, I think Yoda's got, 700, 800 years of training experience behind him that I don't know that the Dog Whisperer will be able to overcome, despite his wonderful rapport with our canine friends.
So unless we really monkeyed around with Cesar's fictional version, it's hands down to Yoda, it's sounding like.
Yeah, I gotta say.
All right.
Yoda all the way.
Yoda all the
Yoda
way.
Yoda in a walk.
Yeah. Yoda in a gasser.
That is a good front runner.
Where are we going to be? Where are we going to be?
Where are we going to be? We are going to be, he said, pulling up the schedule, because he didn't pull it all the way up before the podcast for some reason. We are going to be in Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington on November 16th and 17th, respectively, with our old chum, Will Wheaton,
yeah,
the show we like to call Will Wheaton versus Paul and Storm. Portland on the 16th at the Aladdin Theater with special guests the Double Clicks, and then on the 17th at the Triple Door in Seattle. That show is basically sold out at this point. I think they may be still selling standing room tickets, but there's very few tickets left, if any, there. But that's also with John Roderick. On the 29th of November, we're at the Soiled Dove Underground in Denver, Colorado. On the 30th, we're in San Francisco at Café du Nord.
Uh-huh.
And finally, on the 1st of December, will be another Will Wheaton versus Paul and Storm show, this one at Largo in Los Angeles. Special guest or guests to be announced. And that will finish us out for the year.
Yeah.
We're working on some stuff for early 2000. In fact, an email came in while we were on the podcast here for a possible thing for January. And we'll let you all know when things start coming through for the 012.
We will keep you posted. We now have 427. You thought 120 was a lot of things. 427 people, minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions. Go to paulandstorm.com to find out about how to get on board that battering ram.
And, of course, don't forget about Joko Cruise Crazy this February. Supplies, cabin inventory is dwindling fast for that. So if you've been considering maybe doing the cruise for 2012, February 19th to 26th, now is the time to make your decision before you get shut out.
Other things you should be aware of is that I'm Storm.
And I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. You turned me into a newt.
Go do things.